This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor. And this is our 1 hour time slot to open a dialogue about your retirement portfolio, the particular index, a particular industry, a particular asset class. And we're going to talk about how to build up your entire financial picture and your portfolio without taking more risk than you have to or than you should. Now, I invite your calls. Let's have some fun today. We'll talk about anything that has to do with your money, savings, investing, maybe saving it, right? You can get through right now. We'll take your call in a couple of minutes at 888-99-CHART. Once again, that's 888-992-4278. Now, Steve and I talked before about transitioning from growth to value stocks, and high profile proponents of value investing, including Warren Buffett, have argued that the essence of value investing is buying stocks at less than what would be their intrinsic value. Now, the intrinsic value is a subjective term. That number is very, very subjective. So it's up to you to come up with what that is. But understanding the how to get to that number, at least in a general way, is very, very important. Now, the discount of the market price from that intrinsic value is what Benjamin Graham calls the margin of safety. It's that gap between what it's trading at today and what you think the intrinsic value is, based on usually cash flows, earnings, balance sheets, growth, etc. All those go into the calculation and the understanding of what is the intrinsic value of a company. Now, some may use the present value of future cash flows. That's the basic definition of value of any financial asset, right? It's what am I going to get in the future? And when it comes to cash flows, think of a bond, for example, meaning future interest payments. And then you have to discount those cash flows based on some sort of market rate to today's number, right? Because you rather have less money today, right, than 5 years from now. You have to wait 5 years to get a larger amount. So say in 5 years you're going to get $100 payment in interest. Well, you need to discount that $100 by some sort of interest rate to get to a lower value today that you would accept, right? Because you can go and invest a lower amount and get more or equal to $100 5 years from now. So it can be a little bit complex, but it's a basic concept you need to understand when it comes to investing. Now, present value is simplest of two, as it required is it's only one input, really, like I said, an interest rate. And that interest rate is usually the 10-year treasury rate, but you can use other rates as well. Now, the theory behind using treasury rates to define the risk-free rate is that it's zero risk. You're not risking your principal. The higher this rate is, the less attractive other investments will be, all else being equal. And this is why when interest rates fall in the 10-year treasury rate, usually stock prices go up, bond prices go up, because now you're discounting those future cash flows by a lower rate. And that's one of the goals of the Federal Reserve when they do lower interest rates. They're trying to raise asset prices. They're trying to create that wealth effect. They're trying to create what they call animal spirits. And they say all this in their wording of why they're lowering interest rates, why they're targeting asset prices. And this is a very basic concept that you need to understand and understand what the Fed is trying to get at. Now, the Fed's raising rates. Now, what effect will that have now? For the most part, it should have an opposite effect. Should lower asset prices to a degree. Now, it hasn't done that a whole lot, but that's generally what it's supposed to do. And that's why they do it slowly, because they don't want to really destroy the market. They do it at a measured pace. Now, future cash flows are by far the most complex, because many times these numbers are merely projections, right? You can tell me what the cash flow has been over the last year, but do you know exactly what it's going to be going forward? On a bond, it's really easy. As long as they don't default, this is what the payment's going to be. On a stock, that can be up in the air. Especially when it becomes, when you're talking about companies that don't pay dividends, companies that are growth stocks, and you're trying to project out 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what profits are going to be, what cash flows are going to be from the business. Now in 99, 2000, the story of the tech sector was that they were going to have massive growth and future cash flows were going to be gigantic. Well, in reality, the expectations that were built in the market were not nearly as bright as the market had expected. And that's why you had the tech crash. And we'll have something similar here in the next few years. Probably, you know, the likes of Tesla will crash and burn into flames, like a lot of the tech names from the late 90s and 2000 did. And there'll be other names as well. A lot of them are private. They're maybe less public these days. Think of private equity firms and the Ubers of the world. And there's certainly a bubble in that area as well. So understanding future cash flows, discounting them to current values are important when you're trying to figure out the value of a stock. Now, if you can fully understand these two pillars of finance, then you will be a step ahead. Understanding the big picture is crucial to making good investment decisions. Now, do you have a question about determining value or any other money questions? Our listener line is open at 888-99-CHART. Let's check in now with our 24-hour listener line with a question that came in between programs.
Hi, Steve. Can you explain what puts and calls options trading and how would that benefit the average investor?
Well, puts and calls are derivatives. They're options. And what they are options, just like they say, option to buy or sell a particular security at a certain price in the future, at a certain and it expires on a certain date. Okay. Now, a call is the option to purchase the stock at a certain date in time at a certain price. A put is the opposite. It's the option to sell the stock at a future price or a future date at a certain price called the strike price. Now, if you're going to be bullish on a stock, you would buy a call option. If you would be bearish on a stock, you would buy a put option. Now, you can use both to hedge. For example, if you own a stock, you could sell a call at a higher price than it is today. It's called an out-of-the-money call. Get a premium, and if it goes up in value, you'll gain a little bit up until that strike price, and then beyond that, whoever owns it will make that profit and your profit will be limited. Now, on a put, you can use it to hedge by buying a put option. And if stock price goes down dramatically, you won't lose more than the difference between today's price and the strike price that you bought the put option at. You could sell a put option if you want to buy a stock at a specific price. They're complex. So can you use them to your advantage? Absolutely. But you really need to understand the intricacies, and it's by far the area where most people get in the trouble, and they get in over their head too quickly. So if you're going to use them very diligently, very carefully, and really understand what strategy you're deploying and what you're buying, or potentially what options you're selling as well, and make sure you have your eyes 1,000% open if you're going to endeavor on that game, because it's very risky, and 85% of options expire worthless. So that's something to consider as well. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. How about a Money Quip? Author and comedy writer Robert Orban said, "Every day I get up and look through the Forbes list of the richest people in America. If I'm not on there, I go to work." We're working to help you make the most of your money. Check in with your question or comment. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, it's easier to understand an ETF's stock-like characteristics, but what about ETNs, exchange-traded notes? How to choose between an ETF and an ETN. That's one of our talking points today. Also, some others as well. We have the jobs number, the jobs figure that came out on Friday, and it actually beat expectations, 211,000 jobs created. That was above the market expectation of about 190,000 jobs that were created. However, if you look underneath the surface, it was a pretty weak report overall. And I'm going to explain to you why that is. It was really interesting to see. There's a lot of seasonality adjustments that go along with the April report. But overall, the end report was kind of weaker than that 211,000 jobs would lead on. So we're going to discuss that. And then Ponzi schemes. They are alive and well. You know, we're about a decade past the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme, the biggest in history. And I'm going to talk about where we are currently and how many Ponzi schemes are being uncovered and how you can avoid Ponzi schemes in the future. And then finally, do you have a portfolio emergency? You may or may not. And I'm going to get into when you should ring the alarm bell and then maybe when you should just be a little cautious and make some slight adjustments. So we're going to get to that as well. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. I want to know what's on your mind. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me.
Let's go to Siraj. How are you doing, Siraj, in Fremont?
I'm fine, thanks.
Thanks for calling.
I have 401k question.
Sure.
Generally, I reach a maximum limit by August, September time period every year. So is there any other options available where we can invest our pre-tax money?
Pre-tax money. You know, there's only the 401k. If you max out that, you're kind of stuck. If you do that, then you can't open up an IRA. You can't put up a Roth. You can't do anything. You're stuck. You max it out in your retirement 401k. You can put less in the 401k and open up an IRA, but as long as you don't make too much money salary-wise. But okay. No, Siraj, you're kind of stuck when you max out your 401k. Unless you're right. Self-employed. Are you self-employed?
No, I work for a company.
Okay. See, if you're self-employed, you can set up a different kind of retirement plan. But if you work for a company, you're kind of stuck. Sorry, Siraj.
All right. Thank you.
This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Any money questions are welcome. Give me a call.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Tina in Oakley. How you doing, Tina?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Thanks for calling.
I had a question about life insurance.
Sure.
Whether to invest in term life insurance versus universal life insurance.
That's easy. Term life insurance. This is what you do, Tina. Believe me, the guy who's selling it to you is going to try to talk you into universal life.
Right.
Because he's going to tell you what a great investment it is. He's
yes.
going to tell you that you can make lots of money and that you never lose money. And plus you have the insurance part. What a great thing. You know what it's a great thing for? It's a great thing for him because he makes a ton of commission on those things.
Oh.
It's not a great thing for you. If you took the same amount of money, let's say you buy term. Term is much cheaper, right?
Right.
If you took the difference between the premium on the term and the premium on a whole life or universal life, if you took that difference, in other words, that amount of money you would pay if you bought that old whole life policy and invest it in anything, mutual fund, dollar cost average, in any mid-cap mutual fund, you would make a lot more money than the insurance vehicle could make over
Thanks.
The next 10 years. You would. That is the smart thing to do, Tina.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. And how can I say that with all the certainty in the world? Because I used to work for insurance companies. Beth in Fremont. How you doing, Beth?
Good, thanks. My question is, I have $10,000 and I want to invest it to make it bigger. What's the best way to do that?
Do you know what ETFs, Beth, are?
No, I have not.
Okay. Obviously, you've heard of mutual funds, right?
Yes.
So the best way for you to start would look at some no-load, no transaction fee mutual funds. That means you don't have to pay anybody a commission or a fee to buy or sell them.
Okay.
And there's lots of them out there. Just as many loaded ones, meaning ones that pay commissions, as there are no load ones, the ones that don't pay commission. Now, the problem is if you go ask somebody, you know, a broker or somebody, I want to buy some mutual funds with this $10,000, what they're going to do is say, sure, here's these funds. These are really good funds. Buy these. And they're all going to be loaded funds, commissions. Okay, you don't need to do that. Commission, they usually take 5% off right off the top. 5% in the hole from the day one. I hate that.
Right.
Do not do that.
Okay.
You can buy no-load funds. And you can go to Morningstar.com. Morningstar.com.
Okay.
And they'll give you lists. You just go in there and say, I want no load funds, zero commissions. Make sure that that's what you have in there for the search. And they give you a bunch of them. Or if you send me an email, Beth, just go to my website, investtalk.com. Hit the contact us button. It comes right to my desk. And say, I would like a list of some no load funds. And I'll give you a handful of them.
Oh, great.
You then have to go get the prospectus and look them up. You know, I have to say that because that's the rules. But I'll tell you what they do briefly, and then you can just pick from there if you want to.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Beth. Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Trust me, over long haul, the place to be is the stock market. You know, people tell you, well, the real estate market is better. Well, it is because you get to use leverage. Okay, you put 10%, 20% down, you get to borrow all that money, and then you can double your money in a short period of time if the market's decent, not in the next few years, I can guarantee you that. But, well, yeah, that's because you're borrowing 80, 90% of the cost. Do that in the stock market, I could beat the housing easy. Not a problem, I'd beat that. But you don't do that in the stock market. You use your cash. You don't borrow money. You rarely borrow any money, and when you do, you borrow very little. Not 80, 90% of your investment. That's the difference, everybody, the big difference. So when you have people tell you, well, the real estate market returns more money, well, it does cash on cash. In other words, you put 10% down and you borrow 90%, the property only has to go up 10%, you doubled your money. You made 100% return on the money you put into it because you borrowed a lot of money. Now, think about what you're doing. How much risk are you taking? Now, let's go to Min in San Diego. Hi, Min. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Steve. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you, Steve. How can one person buy a natural gas index?
The easiest way is through an ETF, the UNG ETF. That's the symbol. It's called United States Natural Gas Fund. It's an exchange-traded fund corresponding to the change in price of the natural gas delivered at the Henry Hub in Louisiana. So it goes down if natural gas prices go down. It goes up if natural gas prices go up.
Now, Steve, when you guys track natural gas, does that mean they track natural gas exactly wherever natural gas moves?
Yes, the CRB are supposed to be tracking the index. The UNG is supposed to be tracking the price, not the index.
Right.
You know the difference, right? It's not the index. It's the price of the gas at the Henry Hub station. So what's the price? It's supposed to follow the price. So that's a difference. The index might be a group of natural gas companies. Supply, ship, that's what the index would do. Where this UNG is trying to just track the price. Okay. Man, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Now, here's an investing term you should know. What is a majority shareholder? Now, a majority shareholder is a person or entity that owns more than 50% of a company's outstanding shares. Majority shareholder is often the founder of a company, and in the case of long-established businesses, the founder's descendants. You know, think of like the Walmart, the Waltons, right, that own Walmart. Now, by virtue of controlling more than half of the voting interest in the company, the majority shareholder has a very significant influence in the business operations and strategic direction of the company. Although not all companies have majority shareholders. Everybody could be minority, meaning nobody owns more than 50%. In fact, that's probably the case for most public companies. Now, there's some recent examples, think Facebook, Google, where these different share classes, some have voting rights, some don't. And that is to keep the voting share, majority share, into one hand so they can control the direction of the company. So that's something to consider as well. Your idea about InvestTalk is that you do some of the talking. Let's hear your money question or investing experience at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk continues next. First, a word for KPP Financial, and it's all about growth. For the investor who is looking for optimum growth and is not averse to a higher level of risk, this investment program steps up for you. It's called Disciplined Equity, a program from KPP Financial. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing only on high-quality companies. It's more aggressive than our normal stock program. And although the portfolio is concentrated, it limits exposure to any one sector of the market. To find out more about it, just click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com or click on Contact Steve, and he'll be glad to fill you in. You can ask any question you'd like. And as with all of our programs, a KPP financial principal is personally invested right alongside their clients. This parallel investing is your assurance of optimum care and diligence. Check it out on InvestTalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 25 minutes left in the show, but it's going to go by quick. So if you're going to call in sooner rather than later. Now, what is the difference between an ETF and an ETN? Now, we know that the ETF space is kind of taking over the fund industry. And ETNs are out there, but a lot of people don't really know about them. But they are traded. A lot of people mistake an ETN for an ETF. They think they're the same thing, but they're really not. Now, in practice, they are very similar. You know, both are designed to track an underlying asset, and both often have lower expense ratios than mutual funds, and they both trade on major exchanges just like a stock. Okay. Now, the main difference is under the hood. Now, when you invest in ETF, you are investing in a fund that holds the asset it tracks. Okay, you're investing in a fund that holds the asset it tracks. An ETN is more like a bond. It's really an unsecured debt note issued by an institution, basically saying the institution will pay out the performance of this particular fund. Now, just like a bond, with a bond, an ETN can be held to maturity, bought or sold at will. And if the underwriter, usually it's a bank, were to go bankrupt, then the investor would actually risk total default, right? You would become a creditor to that institution, right? So if you had a Lehman Brothers ETN, you know, sponsored ETN, and they went bankrupt back in 2008, right? You would be in line with all the senior bondholders to get paid. Okay, so there's some risk in that as well. So you need to do some research into the credit rating of the underwriter. It's an important metric. Now, if the underwriter were to receive a credit downgrade, for instance, you would probably see some sort of impact on the price of that ETN. Now, but because a ETN doesn't buy and sell assets when there's buy and sell trades in the open market, there's no taxes that are triggered until you sell the fund, right? Often over a year, and that could be long-term capital gains. There's also no tracking error. You know, there's 4,300 ETFs currently in the market, and they have varying levels of tracking error, which how much do they really track the underlying index, right? Because of all those transactions, they may have some tracking error. Whereas ETNs, this is backed by a bank. So the bank is contractually obligated to track that particular index or those assets tick for tick, dollar for dollar. So there's no tracking error with an ETN, which is great. Now, the market forces will cause the fund to track the underlying investment. So it's not the fund doing the tracking, just supply and demand within the marketplace. So in a lot of ways, these funds are more efficient than ETFs because of their favorable tax treatment. As long as, you know, the sponsor doesn't go bankrupt. So you need to do some research, gain an appropriate level of understanding of them before you put them in your portfolio, but they are something you definitely should consider. Now, at the heart of a good professional relationship is always trust, and trusting that your financial advisor is looking out for you. Now, KP Financial is a registered investment advisor, and being a fiduciary since 1993 when we were founded, we are required to make the best possible decisions for our clients. And being that the principals invest their own money in the same programs as their clients, there's a little extra assurance that that will happen. Now, if you'd like to see more about the investment programs offered by KPP Financial, just go to the investments tab on investtalk.com.
Now, our Invest Talk Insiders program is a source for up-to-the-minute news. And today, these stories are being featured: 4 tips to increase your credit score fast from CNN Money. ETFs aren't just for passive investing anymore, from Money Sense. And many say India has an incredible potential, so why hasn't Warren Buffett invested? That's from CNN Money. There's plenty more where that came from. Join up, become an insider. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com, select the Invest Talk tab, and then go to Invest Talk Insiders.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Jake. I'm a podcast listener in Santa Monica. I'm calling you guys because I'm interested in getting some more emerging market exposure into my portfolio. Doing some research, it looks like the Iranian market seems to be one that I'm seeing a lot about as having a lot of upside potential over the next 10 years. I was wondering what you guys thought about this market. And also, if you know a way to get exposure to this market, it doesn't seem like I can find any ETFs out there with exposure to Iran. A couple articles and information I read talked about having to set up an offshore account in order to gain exposure to a certain restricted markets, which is completely over my head. So I just want to get your take on the idea as a whole and what you guys think about that. I'm a huge fan of the show. Thanks a lot for all you guys do, and I'll listen to you on the podcast.
Oh, that's a great call. I like where your head's at, because I do think the uranium market is an area there where there is potential growth. They do have a pretty diverse economy, and the Iranian nuclear deal reduced sanctions on their economy, and that's certainly going to help their economy over the longer term. And things are starting to move there from what I'm hearing. The problem is the sanctions that were lifted haven't been enough to really give you a lot of opportunities to invest. You do have to set an offshore account, and that can be complex, and figuring out how to basically get your money into Iran to invest can be very, very difficult. So I understand your pain, and I do like where your head's at. I just wish I had a little bit better sense of how to do that, how to gain exposure in this market and other ETFs that are involved. And there's certainly not an Iran-focused ETF, but it is something that would be great if there was one, and there'd be a lot of interest. But frankly, it's just a market that's very, very difficult to get access to. And it's just not something the average investor can do, especially at a small scale. You're going to need a lot of money to be able to direct into maybe a large fund over there that's going to find ways to get outside capital or knows how to bring in your money. So it's hard. And I feel your pain, but I really don't have a great answer to give you when it comes to options to do that. 8899 chart is our number, 888-992-4278. Now, we are about a decade on from the Bernie Madoff scandal. It's the largest Ponzi scheme in history that was uncovered, $65 billion. And what's interesting is that it hasn't ended Ponzi schemes. And frankly, I don't think Ponzi schemes will ever go away completely. But it is something you need to understand and consider. Last year alone, 59 Ponzi schemes were uncovered in the U.S. with a total alleged losses of $2.37 billion, and that's according to Ponzi Tracker. Now, since 2012, an average of 65 Ponzis a year have been discovered, with a medium scheme size around $6 million. Now, both the SEC and FINRA have whistleblowing programs and complaint hotlines to help successfully unearth some of these fraudsters. And if you work for a financial advisor and you think potentially they could be defrauding their clients, you can call this hotline. Or maybe you're just an investor and you're having trouble getting your money back. And that tends to be where the red flags start. And that's usually where FINRA and the SEC start getting complaints from investors saying, I invested this much money, I want some of my money back, and they won't give it back to me. And you would think that these are schemes that are only perpetrated on people that are less educated, and the answer is really, it's not true. Even highly educated people are often victims of Ponzi schemes. And people who run the Ponzi schemes are very charismatic. So it doesn't matter your socioeconomic status. Anybody is subject to this. And usually it has to do with affinity scams. It's usually people that run in your circle. Either your synagogue, or maybe your city council, or there's some sort of activity or commonality between you two that will allow them to gain your trust. And the big question is, how do you avoid these? Well, first on top of the list is promises of high returns with low risk, or suspiciously consistent returns. And really, this is common sense. Markets go up and down. No one is consistent over long periods of time. And if someone claims otherwise, they're probably lying to you. Now, you can go to FINRA's Broker Check website and do your own research there. That's going to be helpful as well. And a lot of times it's, you know, investors need to watch out for complex, secretive, or just plain bizarre strategies that these Ponzi schemes tend to deploy. One recent one is one that was trying to make money off ticket sales to the Broadway show Hamilton. Another offered investors a slice of securitized loans to professional athletes. And that was marketed by a former professional athlete, a New York Giants football player. And this is why investors are urged to invest with regulated entities that follow strict compliance and paperwork procedures. I know a lot of times, and we try to streamline our paperwork process, and we just want digital, so that's going to be helpful as well. But the paperwork is complex to set up accounts. And, you know, a lot of people look at that and their eyes glaze over, but in reality, that's to protect the investor. And, you know, part of me is annoyed by it, but part of me says it's good because it's very important that investors' money is protected. And I think the number one way that you can avoid a Ponzi scheme is never give your money to the advisor, right? To the investor. It's the money should be going into a third-party custodian. That's why we use TD Ameritrade, we use Fidelity. We use third-party custodians, meaning they're holding onto the money, not the advisor, not the person that's giving you the advice. That's how Bernie Madoff stole the money. He was receiving through his own entity, not a third-party entity, his own entity, the money. So he could go and do whatever he wanted with it. And that's the number one way that you can avoid getting caught in a Ponzi scheme. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listen line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Jack in Concord, how you doing, Jack?
I'm doing good, and you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I have a question. I'm seeing my financial advisor in about a week. Now, I've been seeing this guy for several years. He doesn't charge, and what he does is he advises, hoping that when you do retire, you'll invest your money with him, mm-hmm. And he'll manage your retirement account.
Yes.
So I'm you know, one of the things, I'm getting pretty close to retirement now, and one of the things that kind of struck me, been listening to you, is what sort of questions should I be asking this fellow around how he manages the money, or what sort of investments does he invest in to get a sense of whether or not it's a good deal?
Very good question, Jack. Appreciate that. Well, besides asking for 1, 3, and 5 year performance, because you need to ask that, what's your performance? And then you compare that performance with the overall market. At the very least, he needs to be matching the market. He actually should outperform if he's going to get paid. And that's net after his fees. So you'll want to see those numbers. He should be able to talk to him. Then what you want to do is say, well, if he's putting you in stocks, you want to see what his stock picks are. And then take a list of them with you and then see how they've done in the last 1, 3 years. Okay?
All right.
And then you want to ask him like questions like, what kind of risk does he take? How much money, percentage-wise, of my portfolio would you buy in any one stock? If he says he'll buy 10, 15, 20%, he's a very high-risk player.
Very high.
It should be 3%, around 3%. It could be 4, it could be 5, it could be 2, but around 3%. And you might want to ask him, well, what does he think of the international market? If he's not too keen on international market, that tells me that he's not looking at the future. He's not looking forward. Just ask the question, what do you think about the rest of the world, the international market? Will we be taking advantage of that? Do you take advantage of that? How do you do it? Ask those kinds of questions.
No, great.
And if you want more detailed information, Jack, you can email me at investtalk.com, and I'll give you a list of questions you should ask. And these are the questions that people should ask me.
All right, I appreciate it.
Okay, Jack, appreciate the call.
All right, thanks a lot.
Good luck. I'd love to manage your money too, so, you know, I'll answer the same questions. Jack, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Invest Talk. 8899 chart is our number.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Melody in San Diego. How you doing, Melody?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling today because my husband stopped to Ameritrade, and a broker there gave him some information about these new ETFs. They're called TDAX Independence 2040 ETF. And apparently it's you've heard of those mutual funds that have the target date.
Yeah,
but this is an ETF that has that.
Yeah.
What do you think of those? Yeah.
I do not like a Melody. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
It's the target date that bothers me. Okay, so let's say you're going to retire in 2040, and that's when you want to have that money. That's okay. I don't have a problem with you retiring at 2040 or 2020 or whatever. But when you buy an investment that targets that time, the way they package these investments together is, if it's way out there like 2040, they start first by investing in stocks, which is a proper thing to do.
Sure.
Okay? But what happens is time goes by, they get more conservative. And I don't even mind more conservative. I don't. But what I do mind is their conception of conservative is to put you in bonds. And they automatically put you in more and more percentage of bonds or bond type of issues as you approach the date 2040. Now, what they're doing is completely ignoring the reality of what's going on in the market at the time.
Sure.
So what could be, it could be the absolute worst time to be investing in more and more bonds, and yet that's exactly what they're doing because it's on automatic pilot.
Okay.
It's just going to do it. That really is my only complaint about these things.
Okay.
But that's why I don't like them.
Okay.
You could do it yourself by saying, okay, well, we know if it's 2040, we know we're all in stocks now. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, well, maybe I'll get a little bit more conservative. Then you can look at the realm of the investment environment out there and say, but this is not a good time, or this is a great time to be buying bonds. So let me buy more bonds than I would normally.
Sure.
You see?
Sure.
So then you can actually adjust it to the reality instead of being an automatic pilot. This is what they're really doing, Melody, okay? They're saying if they put this 2040 date on it, that you're just going to leave it there. 2040.
Sure.
And never touch it, and they love you for that because then they never have to think about trying to keep you as a client.
It's almost like an annuity then at that point.
Exactly. Huh. They love it because it holds you in. It's a great marketing idea, not so great investment idea.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Melody. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Steve in Anaheim. How you doing, Steve?
I have my money in a lot of different places. I have some deferred comp. I have 401ks. Huh? But I also have some money in annuities. And I always hear a lot of the investment programs talking about annuities are not so great. Why they're not so good.
Remember, annuities are an insurance product. They're very complex. They're legalese. If you ever try to read that annuity document, you would probably get lost, okay?
Exactly.
And that works to the insurance company's benefit, obviously, because it is confusing. Attorneys can't figure that darn thing out. So I used to be in the insurance business, Steve. I know what they do. But let's make it simple. Why aren't annuities good? Because I don't like them either. Why? The thing that they hook you on is they guarantee you a return, right? It could be as good as 5, 6, 7% a few years ago. Bad thing about annuities, here's a couple of things. One, you were required to hold on to them for a certain length of period of time, usually 7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Number two, if it is an annuity that's tracked to the stock market, do you have choices? Like, can you buy the S&P 500 index or mutual funds or something like that?
I think it is, yes. I'm pretty sure.
So what they do is they give you choices to buy the stock market. But there's fees for this. The annuity, the insurance company charges you a fee. The mutual fund that you're buying charges you a fee. And the annuities are very high. Their fees are very, very high. They're kind of hidden, but they're very high. They also limit your return. You can't make as much as the stock market in 10 years. And the reason why they have holding periods, 10 years, because there's never been a 10-year period in the stock market's history where the stock market has not gone up. They know it's going to go up. That's why they can guarantee you that money. Now, annuities are a tax-deferred instrument. You never use an IRA to buy an annuity because it's already a tax-deferred instrument. But what happens in an annuity is you get a false sense of its growth because you don't have to pay taxes. You don't have to pay capital gains taxes until you sell it. When you sell it 10 years from now, all the capital gains that has been built up in that annuity are due. That means your return, you say, oh, I made 20%. Great. Maybe you only made 10% because you haven't paid the taxes yet.
Oh, gosh.
And you don't know what that tax responsibility is. They don't know that until you sell it. So there's a lot of little negatives when, Steve, you could just go buy an S&P 500 index outside the annuity, and you'll do much better if you held it for the same length of time.
Well, that's thanks why. For the info. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the call. Annuities, everybody, it's only for special situations, really special situations that you would want it. And usually that's trying to transfer your money to the next generation. Very, very special.
Now our hour is up. Thank you for listening and joining in. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's plan on getting together tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.